Welcome back to the JX. I'm Mike Green. We've been following the progress of the Klamath Dam removal project throughout this year. The last cofferdam on Iron Gate Dam is scheduled for removal this week, and across the nation there seems to be a dam removal movement. Dr. Ann Willis is the California Regional Director for American Rivers and has a decade of experience working in the Klamath watershed. She joins the JX with the latest report on the Klamath Dam removal project, and you can join the conversation by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Dr. Willis, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Morning. Welcome to the JX.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, what's the latest?
Well, the latest is very exciting. Yesterday morning, the final cofferdam at Iron Gate was removed, and for the first time in 100 years, the Klamath River is able to flow freely from Lake Huona down to the Pacific Ocean. It's a really incredible milestone.
Well, congratulations. So what led to this? How long did it take?
There's been a long movement of advocacy for dam removal. In some senses, this movement started almost from the moment these dams were proposed back in the early 1900s. The California and Oregon Power Company constructed these dams to generate hydropower, but when they did so, they ended up displacing and moving a lot of the indigenous people who had lived here since time immemorial. And so in that sense, the dam removal campaign has been going on for nearly a century. But it wasn't really until the early 2000s, 2002, when there was a large fish kill on the Klamath River, that the advocacy for dam removal really started to pick up momentum. And there were a couple of reasons for this. One was because the real environmental cost of these dams was becoming more and more apparent. Not only were there impacts on fish, but there were also impacts on water quality that was occasionally making the reservoirs and rivers unsafe for people to be in. Another factor that came into this moment of momentum was the fact that because these are hydropower dams, they operate under a license, and that license needs to be renewed every 30 to 50 years, and the operating license for these dams was up. And so it was a real moment where people were able to reflect on the original purpose of these dams, whether the service that they were contributing was worth the cost that we were paying, both in, you know, the environmental cost and the public health and safety cost. And in the end, the reason to remove the dams was economic. It didn't make sense for the power company to invest the money they were going to have to pay to bring these dams up to code. You know, when they were built, the last dam was completed in 1962, laws like the Clean Water Act and the Endangered Species Act didn't exist. And while people's opinions about things like the Endangered Species Act may be quite varied, everybody agrees that we should have clean, safe water for the environment and for people. So it became really important to bring these dams up to code. And then when it turned out it was going to cost more to do that than it would to remove them and replace the power that they were generating with a different source, ultimately, the only solution that really made sense was dam removal. And that's where we are today.
Well, it sounds like economics drove the beginning of the development of dams. And I read somewhere there's more than 93,000 across the country, and a majority of them are private ownership.
That's correct. So the 93,000 dams that are across the country are actually dams that are in a registry, the National Inventory of Dams, that's maintained by the federal government. But when we think about dams that folks may be even more familiar with, you know, maybe small individually owned dams that are used for things like seasonal water diversions or very small hydropower projects that are not regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the number of dams across the country actually grows to over 400,000. And you are correct. Most of them are privately owned. So it means that when a dam needs repairs or retrofitting or removal, those costs are then similarly shouldered by a private dam owner. And that's oftentimes when they make a decision that they can replace the service of those dams without replacing the actual structure of the dams themselves.
So it's a win-win situation. They won to begin with to get the dam. And then when the costs get too much, they win by turning the dam over.
Oftentimes, that's true, yes. When they remove a dam, you know, dam removal since 1999 has been essentially voluntary. Maybe it's taken a long time before enough information has been available to really show that the best solution to an obsolete dam is removal. But ultimately, these dams are removed voluntarily.
Dr. Ann Willis is the California Regional Director for American Rivers. She has a decade of experience working in the Klamath watershed. You can join us in the conversation at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Dr. Willis, once the river is free-flowing again, how long does it take to return to its normal flow and seasonal dynamics?
That's a great question. There are the short-term impacts, which are what everybody's seeing right now. And when I say short-term impacts, I'm thinking about things like people witnessing sediment flowing downstream. Again, sometimes for the first time in 100 years, there are a lot of people who have no living memory of this river running the way that it had for millions of years before it was dammed. So these short-term impacts can look really drastic, and they can seem sad. But the thing that we know about dam removal is that those short-term impacts are very limited. After about a year or so, we see the river really start to recover to its historical natural processes. And then it's really just a question of how the river responds to its environment over time. You know, I like to think about it as a patient who goes through a major life-saving surgery, you have a recovery period that can still be painful, can still be difficult, but you know you're on the path to recovery. And then after a while, it's really just a question of maintaining your health once you've reached that baseline that was the goal all along. And so that's what dam removal is. You know, that is the major life-saving surgery for the river, and it's currently in its short-term recovery period, which looks messy and can have some difficult moments in it. But ultimately, after about a year or so, we just see the river recover to its natural state and just respond to the year-to-year changes in its own environment.
Well, a year seems a relatively short period of time for the river to recover. How long does it take for the natural ecosystem around it to recover?
Well, that's a question that I'm not sure anybody has an answer to right now. And part of that is because, you know, the river is recovering in environmental conditions that it's never experienced anymore. You know, before the dams were on this river, we had a different kind of climate. Droughts weren't so extreme. We didn't have flood events that were so extreme. And so we're really going to watch this river live into its new shape and its new condition. And how long that takes, I think, really is just going to be a question of what kinds of extreme events the river itself experiences. If we have another multi-year drought, it may be quite some time before we really understand how the river responds to having a generous amount of stream flow in it. And vice versa, if what happens sooner than later are multiple years of unprecedented and extreme flood, well, we're going to see a totally different outcome. And when you compound things that aren't directly related to the river flow, like wildfire, then it adds a whole new level of complication about what this river looks like. And so, you know, this is why it'll be so important to really just observe the river, to monitor it, to understand what's happening so that we can really understand what's happening to the environment around us and what it'll mean for people in the communities in these areas.
Yeah, it sounds pretty complicated. Talk more about the process of removing a dam. I guess that's pretty complicated as well. What's a cofferdam?
A cofferdam is a structure that's put in place to move water out of a river so that you can actually have machinery in the channel to do construction. Now, you can't put a big yellow machine in the middle of a river when it's then going to be flooded with water. So you have to do something with this water. So the cofferdam is put in place to redirect the river water, say, into a pipe or into a diversion that is then routed around the construction area where removal will occur. In this case, the cofferdam, for example, at Iron Gate, was used to push water into the historical tunnel that used to be part of Iron Gate Dam's infrastructure itself. So in some ways, the dam was able to help in its own deconstruction. We were able to use existing parts of it in order to complete this process. And then the way that the dam was removed really depended on how it was built. You know, Iron Gate Dam was essentially an earthen dam with a clay core, and the earth that was used to build Iron Gate was dug out of the side of the hill very close to the location of the dam itself. So when Iron Gate was deconstructed, that dirt was simply taken back and put back where it came from. So, you know, if you were to go out to that site, you would see a new, freshly earthen hill at the area. And that hill had been Iron Gate Dam. But other dams like Copco 1 and J.C. Boyle, you know, those were concrete dams, and they did not have tunnels like Iron Gate. And so dismantling them was actually a very carefully and deliberately followed process of first having to drill tunnels in the base of them and then blast out the back of the tunnel with dynamite so that the reservoir behind the dam could be drained in the first place. That kind of work happened earlier this year, starting in January. And then the rest of the dams are really just deconstructed one shovelful at a time. I mean, these are fairly large shovels on backhoes. But yeah, it's just one shovelful at a time that moves dirt and concrete and rebar. And, you know, one of these dams even had old railroad stakes and railroad ties in them. There were all kinds of really unusual things that were found in the dams themselves when they had been built.
Well, it sounds pretty complicated, and it sounds like there's a lot of waste.
Go ahead.
When you remove all of that, where does it go, and how does it get rid of? How do you get rid of it, and what does all that cost?
It can cost a lot. You know, the cost of dam removal was about $500 million, which is a lot of money. But if you think about what it costs to build some of these structures, you know, and we had to replace a spillway, which is basically just a concrete ramp that water flows down when a reservoir gets too full. When we replaced the spillway at Folsom Dam down in the Central Valley, that cost nearly $1 billion. So these are big projects with substantial costs. But $500 million is actually a bargain compared to the cost of sometimes repairing or retrofitting these dams. Half of that money is being supplied by the state of California. The state of California committed to funding half of the dam removal itself. The other half of the money is being supplied by PacifiCorps through surcharges that have been passed along to their ratepayers. So it is a substantial amount of money, but again, less than what it was going to cost everyone to repair and retrofit these dams and keep them in service.
Well, we're running out of time, so I have one other question that I want you to ask. I want you to answer. The indigenous tribes, how have they responded to the removal of the dams?
You know, it's almost hard to put into words what people whose, you know, tribes have been here since time immemorial are experiencing. What I feel like I see and what they share is just a tremendous, tremendous sense of not just accomplishment, but healing. This is a really important part of healing the environment, healing people who have a deep relationship to this environment. And it's been a very long time in coming.
Thank you, Dr. Willis. We've got to run. We've run out of time. I'm Mike Green. The JX will return.